This is why we have poets write love songs, not scientists. That was fun, Richard. Thank you. And no, I'm not going to sing my talk. You will be pleased to hear that. Well, we're meeting here in Tennessee, a state that has had a rich history when it comes to the teaching of evolution, beginning with the iconic Scopes trial. John Scopes made an appearance at the costume party last night. I don't know how many of you knew that. The Halloween party. We had all visitations from a lot of different people, including several Higgs bosons, which is work on that. We didn't have to guess their weights. The Scopes trial, many other court cases and laws regarding evolution education, and most recently in a law that was passed last spring. So I want to talk this morning about what the Tennessee Academic Freedom Law means to you. State Senator Bo Watson, who has a biology degree from the University of Tennessee, resubmitted a bill from the 2011 legislative session that had passed the House but hadn't yet passed the Senate. It went through the Senate very quickly, went to the governor's desk, our allies in Tennessee, and we helped mount a campaign which I think was quite successful in discouraging the governor from signing the bill. We got over 6,000 signatures on a petition within a period of days that were sent to the governor saying, this is a bad bill, veto the bill. Unfortunately, the way legislation is figured in Tennessee, the bill could become law without his signature, and that's what he chose to do, but he didn't sign it, so, you know, in a way, that's progress. The bill got some bad publicity, and that's important as well. The bill calls for students to, quote, explore scientific questions, learn about scientific evidence, develop critical thinking skills, and respond appropriately and respectfully to differences of opinion about scientific subjects. That sounds pretty good. Raise your hand if you don't want your children to be critical thinkers, right? So, you know, everybody's in favor of critical thinking. It also stated that the State Board of Education or any other administrative unit, a district or a school board, could not, quote, prohibit any teacher from helping students understand, analyze, critique, and review the strengths and weaknesses of existing scientific theories. Now, mentioned in the bill are the scientific theories surrounding evolution, global warming, and human cloning. Well, even though Tennessee teachers haven't complained about persecution, this also sounds innocuous enough. Yet scientists and science educators and the newspapers in Tennessee vigorously protested this law and have encouraged legislators to veto it and for the governor to not sign it, etc. Now, why was there this big outpouring of opposition to this law? Well, for those of us who study the creation and evolution controversy, the answer is clear. The bill may sound innocuous, but it has serious consequences for science education in Tennessee and in any other state where such a bill is passed. The bill is not unique to Tennessee. There have been approximately 40 similar bills submitted in state legislatures around the country since 2004. These bills are creationist bills masquerading as critical thinking or academic freedom bills, and I'll try to illustrate why I believe this is so. Well, of course, the United States is unique among developed nations in its high percentage of rejection of evolution. This graphic from Science Magazine is one of their most requested. Miller, Scott, and Okamoto, 2005. John Miller did all the work. I just helped with the interpretation. We asked humans evolved from earlier forms of animals, true or false? And the graphic that you saw, the blue is agree, the red is disagree, the yellow is not sure. And this is a study of 34 different countries around the world. You know where we are? We beat Turkey. So the American public shows a very high rejection of evolution, and yet scientists are virtually unanimous that evolution has taken place. In this survey of members of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, data show scientists overwhelmingly agree that humans and other living things have evolved over time. And other surveys done more recently similarly show large percentages of scientists accepting evolution. Now, one criticism that you hear is, oh, it's because scientists are all a bunch of atheists, and that's not true. In this same Pew Foundation study, 51% of scientists believe in God or a higher power. So, you know, evolution is good science, and scientists and teachers don't like to see it, see these anti-evolution laws passed, and it's not because all scientists are atheists. But is the Tennessee law an anti-evolution law? It sounds like it's just a pro-critical thinking law. But I assure you that, like everything else, these laws have a history. They don't occur in a vacuum, and the history of this kind of law, I believe, shows very clearly that they are anti-evolution laws. So let me just take a small digression into the history here, just so I can set up my argument. Of course, the earliest period of this history was an attempt to ban the teaching of evolution. The heyday of this period was about 1919 to about 1927, and it includes the 1925 Scopes trial here in Tennessee, featuring William Jennings Bryan on the right, Clarence Darrow on the left, the most famous legal figures of their day. During the trial, William Jennings Bryan made 3 points. One, that evolution is unsupported science. 2, that evolution is incompatible with religion, and 3, that citizens, not experts, should determine the curriculum. These views may sound very familiar. They are very similar to what we refer to at NCSC as the pillars of creationism, and we find them expressed in creationist opinions and materials today. Evolution is a theory in crisis. Scientists are giving up on evolution. It's no longer believed to be true. Evolution is incompatible with faith. This is something that you find expressed very, very strongly by conservative Christians. And the equivalent of Brian's third position, the fairness pillar, that it's only fair if you teach evolution, you should balance it with something like creationism, intelligent design, or, as I will try to demonstrate, evidence against evolution. Now, at different times in the history of this controversy, one or another of these pillars has been emphasized. The religion pillar was emphasized most strongly during the Scopes period. Today, what we're seeing is a blend of the first and third pillars, the attack upon the validity of evolution, and also the cultural argument, shall we say, of fairness, critical thinking, etc. Now, the reason that today's creationists de-emphasize the religion pillar has to do with the First Amendment and legal decisions that have taught creationists to use a different strategy. To refresh your memory about the Establishment Clause, the Establishment Clause and Free Exercise Clauses in the First Amendment mean that government agencies can neither advance nor inhibit religion. Schools must be religiously neutral. And courts have been very firm that schools cannot advocate religion, particularly schools cannot advocate religion, because that this is a captive audience, and parents have the right to decide or to influence the religion of their children. So the government has to keep its pointy nose out of religion. Now, you can discuss religion as a social issue. You can discuss religion historically. You just can't say Buddha was right or Jesus was right. Reflecting this neutrality, the Supreme Court in 1968 struck down anti-evolution laws like the one Scopes was tried under. In Epperson versus Arkansas, the court stated, the First Amendment does not permit the state to require that teaching and learning must be tailored to the principles or prohibitions of any religious sect or dogma. Creationists rallied by contending that creationism should be taught along with evolution to balance it out in a sense of fairness. But obviously, they couldn't just teach creationism straight up religion to balance out evolution. Instead, they invented something called creation science. Henry Morris of the Institute for Creation Research is the most famous of the 20th century creation science proponents, and he basically built this movement. This is a view based on a literal interpretation of Genesis that that God specially created the universe and living things in their present form. And obviously, this is a view that is not compatible with evolution. The science of creation science is zany, to say the least. The Earth is only about 6,000 years old. Therefore, all geology has to be compressed into that period of time. So they're great enthusiasts for catastrophic geology, where Noah's flood is a historical event, not merely symbolic, as believed by many Christians. Geological formations such as the Grand Staircase in the Colorado Plateau, including Grand Canyon, must therefore have been laid down by the floodwaters. Tens of thousands of feet of sediments over a period of months, not billions of years. Now, needless to say, geologists find many reasons why either a catastrophic origin of sediments or the catastrophic carving of Grand Canyon are not possible, and a great deal of evidence against it. If you want to know more about why Grand Canyon is not catastrophically deposited or cut, consider coming, this is the commercial, to NCSC's Grand Canyon trip, which we have every summer. We have a really good time. We have some veterans of the Grand Canyon trip in this audience. We talk about creationists, creation science view, and standard geology, and we let you decide for yourself. Here we're looking at a sandstone slab by River's Edge that the young earth creationist claim shows evidence of reptiles escaping from the rising floodwater. You find some lovely footprints on this slab here. What's kind of interesting is that this is an aeolian deposit. This is a huge sand dune, the Coconino sandstone, that extends through a huge, huge stretch of the central part of the country and is exposed beautifully in Grand Canyon. A difficult question for the creation science proponents to explain is how you get a water lane deposit, an aeolian or air lane laid deposit, and another water below that, and water. This is curious. So we have a lot of fun with creation science on our Grand Canyon trip. Now, the science of creation sciences obviously isn't very good, but neither is the logic. They have what they call the two-model approach, in which there's only two possibilities. There's either evolution or there's biblical special creationism. And so all you have to do is disprove evolution, and creationism wins by default. So the literature in creation science is focused overwhelmingly, necessarily, upon demonstrating, to their satisfaction, if not ours, that evolution is weak science, evolution is wrong, and therefore they win by default. Now, of course, the logic here is pretty bad, because even if you were able to disprove evolution, that doesn't mean there's no other alternative other than biblical special creationism. Just on the religious side of things, there's theistic evolution. There are other world religions. There are tribal religions, ancient religions. And basically, it's just poor logic to argue evidence against evolution is evidence for creationism. But they believe this very, very strongly. And actually, remember this diagram because it's going to come back, because this is at the heart of the pressure for evidence against evolution, strengths and weaknesses kinds of policies like we see in the Tennessee law. Now, during the 70s and 80s, there were efforts to get creation science taught in local school districts, equal time laws for evolution and creation science. They were, of course, challenged in court as being in violation of the Establishment Clause, and the Louisiana law that passed went all the way to the Supreme Court. Louisiana biology teacher Don Aguillard was the lead plaintiff in a case that became known as Edwards versus Aguillard. The Louisiana bill presented creation science as an alternative scientific view, the teaching of which would advance student science education. It was presented as a pedagogical issue, not as a religious issue. The Supreme Court didn't buy it. It struck down the Louisiana equal time law on the grounds that creationism was religion. Calling it science doesn't make it so, and its advocacy in the classroom violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Well, the creationists had struck out again. They were unable to ban evolution and unable to teach creation science to balance it out, but there was hope for them in the Edwards decision, because there were a couple of loopholes that they seized upon very quickly that they believed gave them a way forward. Justice Brennan had written that teachers already possess a flexibility to supplant the present science curriculum with a presentation of theories besides evolution about the origin of life. Now, of course, creation science was the original scientific alternative to evolution, but the courts ruled against it. Fairly quickly, a new scientific alternative to evolution was found: intelligent design. Alas, there's not enough time to talk about intelligent design as dearly as I love to talk about it. But just suffice to say that intelligent design is a subsection of creation science. It leaves out all of the goofball flood geology and Grand Canyon and young Earth stuff and just concentrates on the supposed inability of natural forces to explain complexity in biology and astronomy. Well, intelligent design also had its day in court. The Little School District of Dover, Pennsylvania, provided the test case for intelligent design in 2005 when the Board of Education there passed a policy requiring the teaching of intelligent design. And a district court judge, after hearing weeks of testimony, concluded that intelligent design was religion. Therefore, advocating it in the classroom was unconstitutional. The law was struck down. Just because you call something science does not make it so. This seems really obvious, but that's what is essential in the legal decisions, because it is illegal to promote religion in the public schools. It is not illegal to teach bad science. Okay? Remember that. And in fact, the second loophole is relevant to the Tennessee law. And this is actually a dissent that was written by Justice Scalia. He wrote, "The people of Louisiana, including those who are Christian fundamentalists, are quite entitled, as a secular matter, to have whatever scientific evidence there may be against evolution presented in their schools, just as Mr. Scopes was entitled to present whatever scientific evidence there was for it." And, of course, that's true. If there is scientific evidence against evolution, teachers have the legal right, clearly, as a secular matter, to present it. There is no scientific evidence against evolution. That's the problem. However, our friends over at the Institute for Creation Research very quickly seized upon this immediately after Edwards was released. And I apologize for the long quote. "Teachers should be encouraged to teach the scientific evidences and arguments against evolution in their classes, not just arguments against some proposed mechanism, but against evolution per se, by which they mean the inference of common ancestry." That's the big idea of evolution. And watch that last clause. "Even if they don't wish to recognize these as evidences and arguments for creation." It's evidence against evolution is, of course, the old two-model approach. Disprove evolution and creationists win by default. Now, evidence against evolution is evidence for creationism, in their view. The courts say you can't teach creationism, so teach the evidence against evolution. It's teaching creationism by the back door. Because the only place where you can find the evidence against evolution, the weaknesses of evolution, is in the creationist literature. And creationists really do think in this dichotomous manner. Disprove evolution, we win by default. What about students? Well, there haven't been any surveys of students as to their views about whether they also accept this dichotomous reasoning, but we do have some anecdotal information that suggests that this is not an unlikely expectation for the creationists to have. In El Tejon, California, a few years ago, we had a controversy over the teaching of the evidence against evolution in the intercession course that the district offered, and CNN interviewed some students about their experience. The CNN reporter says, "What have you learned?" The student says, "I've learned that evolution has become over the years more and more people decide it's not completely true and that there has to be another belief or another thing that replaces it." And what is this? That is an intelligent designer. Meaning God? Yes, God, the Christian God who created Earth in 6 days. Okay. The teacher was not teaching creationism. The teacher was teaching evidence against evolution. The teacher was teaching that evolution was crappy science. And this student just sort of thought in the same dichotomous fashion. Well, okay, if evolution doesn't do it, it must be special creation. We don't know how widespread this version is, but the creationists believe that it is very effective. And there have been about 40 of these evidence against evolution type bills called academic freedom bills since the first one appeared in 2004. Not all of them are on this chart. You can't fit them all and still actually read them. And only two of these bills, fortunately, have passed, Louisiana and Tennessee. And the Louisiana and Tennessee bills are very similar. both bundle evolution, origin of life, global warming, and cloning. Cloning? I mean, most of us are a little long in the tooth for having been in high school recently, but if you ask high school students, you know, how was the lab on human cloning? This is not something that they study in high school. What is this? Just so happens that evolution, origin of life, global warming, and human cloning are subjects that get the religious right knickers in a twitch. They really, really, really don't like these topics, and they don't want children learning them, or if they have to be taught them, they want them to be taught in a qualified way that, of course, reflects their conservative religious views. Both the Louisiana and the Tennessee law are couched in terms of critical thinking, not religion. Both encourage teachers to critique evolution and global warming and these other subjects. And both have an obligatory statement that they are not intended to promote religion. Nobody here but us critical thinkers. And, of course, the purpose of this is to try to duck the First Amendment. Now, the Tennessee bill, in addition to having all these other characteristics, is protective. In the sense that the state has told school districts that it can't inhibit a teacher bringing in the strengths and weaknesses of these subjects. And, of course, this means that the district has a difficult time protecting itself against a lawsuit. Given the way that creationism has fared in court over the years, a district would be in much better shape defending the teaching of evolution than defending the teaching of creationism or these strengths and weaknesses bills. But there you go. There are lots of euphemisms for evidence against evolution, and these are the kinds of phrases, and this is the sort of wording that you need to watch for in bills that may come up in your own state legislatures. Critically analyze evidence for evolution. This was the wording that appeared in Ohio, for example. Evidence for and evidence against evolution is fairly common. Strengths and weaknesses of evolution, which is the Tennessee law. Evolution is theory, not fact. We can talk for a long time about what they mean by theory. They do not mean an inferential explanation. Right? Teach the full range of views about origins. That phrase comes from the infamous Santorum Amendment to the No Child Left Behind Act. And, of course, teach the controversy, which is the phrase used most commonly by the Discovery Institute. This is a national campaign. You should watch out for these kinds of bills showing up in your state for policies recommending this kind of behavior in your local school district. You can find sample bills that will advance science and advance freedom of teachers and students. And they're couched in terms that most Americans would find very attractive. I do. I'm a real fundamentalist when it comes to free speech. I think people should be able to say any stupid thing they want to say. And that the solution to stupid speech or bad speech is more speech, not shutting off speech. So that's me. And most Americans also are real fans of free speech. It's a very important part of our culture, of our political heritage, and so forth. So the teacher says, let me teach. Why can't I supplement my science class with current articles and balanced discussion? Linguistic tip. Whenever you see the word balanced in the same page as evolution, it's a creationist document. Balance is one of the words that, you know, this little dog whistle that, oh yeah, okay, the creationists are behind this. There you go. The student says, let me think. Why can't I be allowed to decide for myself what the truth is? Why can't I be allowed to discuss to decide for myself that things fall up? Our friends at the Intelligent Design Promoting Discovery Institute are pushing the academic freedom meme very strongly. One of their positions is that intelligent design promoters have been discriminated against, hence their concern here about teachers being protected from being fired, harassed, intimidated, etc., or students being fired, harassed, intimidated, etc. But when you come right down to it, what we're talking about is what do you teach in middle school and high school? And unlike what you may teach at the university level, you teach the basics at these K-12 school classroom levels. You don't teach the cutting-edge research. In high school physics, you get optics and mass. You don't get string theory, all right? In high school biology, you barely get evolution anyway. There's not nearly enough evolution being taught. To miseducate young learners, to give them a lot of wrong information in the guise of teaching them critical thinking, does them no favors. And I'd advise you to keep an eye out for such bills. Okay, summary of the AFA type of bills. They never mention religion. Of course, they're ducking the Establishment Clause. The stress is upon free speech, academic freedom, etc. The stress is to protect teachers from their district telling them not to do this. There's a reason for this. It has to do with a series of lawsuits that took place in the 90s and 2000s where teachers who were teaching creationism were told by their districts to knock it off. They went ahead and sued their districts for their right to teach what they thought was good science, either evidence against evolution or just intelligent design or flat-out creation science. And their districts won in every single case because the case law is very clear. If a teacher signs a contract to teach in a district, the teacher agrees to teach that curriculum. And the teacher doesn't have academic freedom. You know, the district has a real interest in making sure that the same subject matter is covered in equivalent classes. That this school in fourth grade you're learning long division, and this school in fourth grade you're learning long division. So that when you go into fifth grade, the kids aren't all every place on the scale. Same for science, same for history. So you want to teach the same curriculum across the district. That's very reasonable. So teachers can't just freelance and teach any old damn thing they want. So all of these teachers who sued their districts lost. So hence these bills have protective clauses which tell the district, you can't discipline this teacher for bringing in this stuff. In other words, a get-out-of-jail-free card for a teacher who wants to sneak in creationism, whether through the back door or straight up. It's an inhibition. They are permissive bills, which is very interesting. They don't say, you have to do this. They say, you can do this. From a legal standpoint, that raises the bar as to how to challenge these bills. It makes it harder to challenge the bill on its face. You have to look for the teacher who's stepping over the line, find a plaintiff withstanding, you know, a plaintiff willing to be a plaintiff, and a plaintiff who has standing. They're not always this intersection of the two sets. That's sometimes very hard to do. And then you have to go through a very lengthy trial. And trust me, we don't want to go to trial if we can solve these things without. But having a permissive bill means you have to make one of these as-applied challenges because most judges aren't going to let you get an injunction against the application of the bill on its face. So it's very clever the way they've set up these bills. Well, what can you do? Well, inform yourself. There are lots of books, articles, websites like ours, blogs, that will tell you what's going on, the history of this controversy, why these academic freedom bills are really just the latest face of creationism. You can join your state's American Institute of Biological Science, NCSE, listserv. We have listservs in almost every state where we can notify people as to what's going on and get your assistance if we have a problem in your state. Pay attention. Pay attention to what goes on in your state legislature, what's going on in your state board of education, and also your local boards of education. Find out who the best candidates are and vote for them. Generally speaking, a lot of us just tend not to pay a whole lot of attention to those down ballot issues. We kind of forget, you know, to go to the PTA candidates' nights or the League of Women Voters' candidates' night and we say, whatever, you know, I won't bother voting for those people. It's very important that the right people get elected to local school boards. Run for local school board. We need people who are science savvy to serve on school boards, and that's you and people like you. Consider performing that kind of service for your local school, for your local community. Support good science standards in your state and support good science teaching. If you are a parent, you're going to back to school night, let the teachers know that you have their back, that you are enthusiastic about your child learning evolution, global warming, the controversial issues, and that if there's any problem, the teacher should let you know and you'll stand behind him or her and, you know, make sure that that the administration knows that you, as a parent and a voter, want good science to be taught. Obviously, you can join NCSE. That would help also. NCSE, The National Center for Science Education, the organization that's worked for over 25 years to defend good science education at the grassroots level. NCSE.com is where we live. If you want to sign up for a free Friday electronic newsletter, Glenn Branch puts it out. It's fabulous. You can sign up for that. It's free. You can check our news page for what's going on in the world. Please do also look at our new climate change page, because we have added climate change to evolution, and they're being bundled, so there you go. Our climate change page has a lot of good information on it, and we're adding to it all the time. My colleague, and we're a membership organization, consider joining. NCSE.com, my colleagues are Glenn Branch, the deputy director. Robert Lunn is my communications director. Peter Hess is religious community outreach. Our wonderful flare-ups wranglers, Josh Rosenau and Steve Newton, are the people who are most in charge of handling these local disputes, but we all pitch in, clearly. Education Director Eric Mickle, and our two brand-new climate change specialists, Mark McCaffrey and Minda Berbeko, who is the lovely lady behind the camera. Be sure you say hello to Minda and welcome. She's worked here for a month and a half. Imagine this being your first NCSE conference. How awesome can you get? We are also on Facebook and YouTube. There's Stephen J. Gould holding the world's best biological bumper sticker. Honk if you understand punctuated equilibria. In the book room, if you haven't visited the book room, it's around the corner. I've got a big stack of free bumper stickers. Please take them. I don't want to bring them home. So go and get them. We're also on Facebook, NCSC. Facebook.com/evolution.ncsc. I also am on Facebook, and if you wish to friend me on Facebook, please do it at Eugenie.Scott, because that's the one I actually update. There's a whole bunch of Eugenie Scott sites out there, but I don't update there. So if you want to get my updates, there I am. Thank you. It's always wonderful to come to SciCon, because you get it. So thanks very much for coming, and hopefully, ammunition to the choir. You know more than you did before, and you will go out and do the things that need to be done. Thank you. And Lauren is passing around the microphone as we speak.
I actually have a pretty good arm. You're lucky I don't just throw it at you.
I'm David Morris, and I congratulate you, of course, on adding global warming, and I see the parallelism, but in your talk, there wasn't much parallelism, whether there are legal issues or things that that inhibit teaching global warming, whether they have anything like the visibility of the evolution issues.
Thank you very much for allowing me to kind of follow up on that, because I was trying to finish up so we would have a chance to ask questions and converse. We're SOL when it comes to climate change, I'm sorry. The only legal provisions we have are those against the establishment of religion, against promotion of religion. We're lucky, in a sense, that global warming and evolution are bundled. Because we can go after the law, but the only way we can go after the law is through the evolution angle, because that's the only provision that's unconstitutional. It is not unconstitutional for your state to pass a law saying the world is flat and to require the teachers to teach it. It's just dumb, but it'll certainly be the first dumb law ever passed in a state, I'm sure.
Hi, Romeo Vitelli from Toronto. I was just talking to Dr. Scott before her talk, praising her on the zombie slaying skills that Rebecca Watson mentioned.
Shh, nobody's supposed to know about that. I don't know why Rebecca told everybody about my secret, but I'll just have to somehow cope with it.
Anyway,
your question is.
I was just curious, given the academic freedom this legislation apparently provides teachers, has any teacher tried using it to, say, debunk creation science or ICR's intelligent design research? I'm curious how creationists react when that legislation is used against them.
I don't know any. The question was, do any of the teachers use these kinds of laws to attack creationism and ID. I don't know of any cases like that. Certainly it's possible. But I do, and I've heard people say, "Oh, great! We'll use this bill or this resolution to attack creationism," and that's possible. It certainly is constitutional. But teachers don't have the time. I mean, basically, they barely have time to teach the absolute minimum of evolution. If you ever look at the state standards on evolution, it's once over lightly. Any state standard, maybe California, a bit, there's too much to teach in California, so nobody teaches it. But the curriculum is absolutely jam-packed with too much stuff. The new science education standards that are being developed nationwide, in which 26 states have partnered in the production of and hopefully will adopt once they are refined and completed, will go a long way to improving the science standards nationally. But basically, breadth over depth is what most science standards reflect, and there just is not enough time even to teach evolution properly, much less to bring in the creationist arguments and show you why they're bad. You know, basically, I would really encourage the teaching of more evolution rather than trying to show why Grand Canyon was not cut in a week.
My name's Bob Leitendorf from LA. We've been warned that with the possible changeover with Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the Supreme Court, if we lose her and a right-winger is appointed in the future, it'd be a 5-4 decision with the right-wingers. If that happens, do you anticipate any sort of impact on reversing the accomplishments we've gotten so far with fighting creationism?
One of the contentions legally, and I mentioned that Justice Scalia wrote a dissent to the Supreme Court case striking down equal time for creation science laws. Scalia, Kennedy, Roberts, a couple others, all hate a provision of the prerequisite, why is my brain fogging up on me today? Anyway, there is a previous Supreme Court decision called the Lemon Test, which has three criteria by which most Establishment Clause cases have been decided. The first prong, as they call it, the first test of the Lemon decision is, does the law have a secular purpose? The purpose prong of Lemon is absolutely hated by most lawyers. They don't really like using it. They use the second and third prongs and other provisions, which are fun to talk about, but I want to go on. But the funny thing is that every single one of the creation and evolution cases, and there have been close to a dozen of them now, every single one of these cases that has occurred past 74, which is when Lemon was decided, have all used the purpose prong of Lemon because it so perfectly applies to the case. You know, every case you have to look at the facts of the case, and every single one of these cases, the people who passed the law had the purpose of advancing religion. So boom, it goes up. But Scalia's dissent was more against the purpose prong of Lemon than it was against the teaching creation science along with evolution. I don't think most of them care about science that much, but they do care about the purpose prong. I think if the more conservatives are appointed to the court, the purpose prong of Lemon's gone because they will strike that down. Now, there are other ways of going after Establishment Clause issues, and hopefully these will continue. It's not unconstitutional to teach bad science. It's only unconstitutional to advance religion in the public schools. So constant vigilance.
Do you know of any plans to challenge the law as facially unconstitutional? Any news about that?
Yes, I have views. And I always say, never depend on legal advice from a physical anthropologist, okay? We have a very good legal advisory committee. I mean, members of the legal advisory committee are responsible for the success in Dover. They have, if you've written the briefs that we've written for the freshwater case, we have very, very good people that have been kind enough to work with us pro bono. And we, when the Louisiana law was passed, we had a meeting of the LAC. What do we do about this? And in looking carefully at the way this bill was worded, and of course the Tennessee law is just a clone, virtually, of the Louisiana law. The way these laws are written, the Legal Advisory Committee does not think it's advisable to make a facial challenge. The reason is because, think about it, 100% of the creation and evolution cases, thus having gone to court, have been decided in favor of evolution. Not 95%, 100% of the case law has gone in our direction. You don't want to make bad law. And so we didn't choose Dover. I mean, Dover chose us. But God loves evolutionists because Dover was such a good case for us. However, you don't want to test one of these laws with a bad set of facts. You know, you want to have a good set of facts that is going to allow you to succeed. What that means is you have to find the teacher who is using this law to advance religion, to bring in creationism, bring in intelligent design, bring in creationist materials into the classroom and so forth. You need to find that teacher and you need to bring suit there. And that's not easy. But if you have a good case, yes, we can challenge these laws, but only, I think most advisedly, only as an as-applied challenge, not as a facial challenge. And I think that's we're done.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Eugenie Scott, let's hear it.